Good morning. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, and this is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the 9th of February, 2024. We are going to be embarking on lecture number 3, which is a component of the biochemical mosaic, phosphatidic acid phosphatase. So this will be chapter number 3. Now, I'm at a point where I'm going to introduce to you what's going to arrive at the end of this discussion of this one paper, so that you know that's one of the end goals. And then we're going to go back and thread all of that together into this mosaic. So eventually this paper that I've selected from Nature, published in 2019, is going to reveal an existential phenomena concerning mitochondrial event ontologies. Specifically, we're going to see that the protease YME1L will reorganize the proteome of mitochondria in response to a selected hypoxia associated with nutrient limitation. We're going to see what follows is an inhibition of mTORC1, inducing a lipid signaling cascade that's going to involve phosphatidic acid phosphatase, which will then be associated with a limit decrease in phosphatidylethanolamine in the mitochondrial membrane, which will then promote further proteolysis. So as the YME1L degrades mitochondrial protein translocases and also lipid transfer proteins, there's your dialectic, plus certain metabolic enzymes, this is going to limit mitochondrial biogenesis and limit overall cellular homeostasis, including protein stasis, proteostasis, and lipid homeostasis. So the YME1L protease mediated mitochondrial alteration of a cell line which is pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma derived will be used because we're going to be generating spheroids or xenografts from those cell lines. Now, the spheroids require an explanation. We're going to get to that this morning. Okay, xenografts, I think you already know what those are. Now, the reason we're going there is because this is the fundamental connection to the biomedical association. Okay, because we're now talking about PDAC. Pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, very deadly cancer. Now, what is occurring there when spheroids are made, and that generates an hypoxia, is in common with what occurs with the mitochondrial proteome in tumor tissues of patients with PDAC. Okay? So this is where the correlation is. So in vitro studies using non-attached spheroid culturing of these cells is similar to how cancer cells function in vivo in the pathophysiological network. Okay, that's an important point for you to understand. So YME1L is relevant to that pathophysiology of the intact human PDAC tumor. And what you're going to see is an mTORC1 phosphatidic acid phosphatase YME1L axis, which is going to be regulating the protein network of the mitochondria via post-translational mitochondrial proteostatic alteration. And within all of that framework, you're going to see unique alterations of metabolism, because the mitochondria is involved in a great deal of metabolism, including bioenergetics. And you're also going to see how mitochondrial turnover mediates cellular fate. Okay, so that's what we're leading to. Now, here's a synthetic a priori way to describe how we're going about this. Okay, so this is going to get at the level of the theoretical metaphysical level so that you understand it at two different systems. The biochemical I just went through, biochemical pathophysiology. And now we're going to do a synthetic a priori at the ontic level. Okay. So all phenomena are apprehended, then they are recollected and conceptualized via a priori means, transcendental means, of the sensoria. This is how the synthetic operation, synthetic meaning synthesizing, right? Not artificial, synthetic meaning synthesizing operation, of the faculty of the imagination, which is generating ideas from intuitions. Intuitions are sense data points. And how that's presented to the faculty of the understanding so as to create a schema for ontic events. Now, these a priori events of the central nervous system essentially recapitulate the functions of living systems, including biochemical, cellular, and indeed organismal life. So that second premise there is really important. That's why I'm doing it this way, okay? So this is a syntactical dialectic is what I'm doing here. So consider that we have introduced the concepts of mitochondrial fate, cell fate, relative to protein networks, interlocuting with lipid networks, involving the specific GTP dynamins, certain proteases, kinases, and then the phosphatidic acid phosphatase. That last enzyme will generate, and this is what we're going to have to go through to finish this biochemical mosaic, but what's going to happen when that enzyme functions is generate disulfoglycerol, yeah, but also it will generate ultimately the potential for fatty acid production because of lipase activity. That fatty acid, esterified to coenzyme A, can be used for beta oxidation and cholesterol esterification, all in the mitochondria. What is further uncovered from this process is that phosphatidic acid is used to synthesize phosphatidylethanolamine via phosphatidylserine. So there's a whole host of phosphoglycerolipid metabolic routes that are linked to this. Okay, so that's my synthetic a priori to the means by which we're going to go through this literature. Okay, hopefully that doesn't make things more complex. What I'm doing is suggesting that how the central nervous system deals with phenomena is the same way the cell deals with phenomena. There has to be essentially first an apprehending of a change in activity, a grasping of a change in activity in the cell. Then some kind of cellular recollection, that is, the pattern has to be recognized as a phenomena where there is a template of mechanisms to deal with that change that has occurred. And then the third component of that is the sequence-dependent resolution. Okay? Sequence-dependent resolution. That's how the cell is functioning. So consider mammalian liver itself. Okay, now we're moving on now from the metaphysical discussion. We're moving right back into the literature. Remember, think about the mammalian liver. Well, we haven't talked about it recently. Probably I've said it over the course of several lectures in the last year or two, but there is a metabolic zonation in the liver. There's the periportal, the intermediate, and what's known as the centrilobular or perivenous zone. Three different zones in the liver. And there are unique patterns of alterations of each of those areas at the biochemical level, including that central layer, right? Okay, or actually better known as the perivenous layer or area. And it can be subdivided into four different zones upon liver intoxication. And now we're going to go back to a paper that I was revealing something about two lectures ago. Liver intoxication via acetaminophen overdose. Okay. Pain reliever, over-the-counter pain reliever, known as acetaminophen. Now, within the center adjacent to the central vein, there are typical necrotic cells that organize around swollen mitochondria, which have accumulated lipid droplets, which are associated with a disrupted plasma membrane. And in the areas next to that necrotic region, there are mitochondrial structural alterations, which display a ring-like morphology. And that term that was given for that ring-like structure are spheroids. So the mitochondria takes on a spheroid morphology. So morphologically, mitochondrial spheroids look like and in fact can function as autophagal lysosomes with a lumen surrounded by the mitochondrial membrane fragments that have resealed around it, wherein that lumen can include cytosolic contents plus sections of endoplasmic reticulum, lipid droplets, and other mitochondrial, cytosolic, and membrane fragments. Okay? That's what these spheroids represent. And this necrotic lesion, all of which have been recognized in acetaminophen toxicity. Okay? And then you know why I'm bringing this together, right? So what this suggests is that these mitochondrial spheroids, which are a pathophysiological structure, are positive for lysosomal enzymes. They are also acidic in nature, and they actually, these spheroids can have a degradation capacity. Thus, they represent of yet another pathway for mitochondrial fate via fission or fusion to mitophagy. Okay. Now, recall this. The YME1L minus cells we were talking about didn't show deficiencies. These remember, that's the protease in the mitochondrial membrane. So protease deficient cells, but that protein, of course, is in the mitochondrial membrane, didn't show any deficiencies in basal oxygen consumption or even changes in the NAD to NADH ratio. But spheroid growth was not restored back to the normal mitochondrial morphology when the NAD to NADH ratio was altered. So that means there's something unique about the TCA cycle electron transport chain associated with those spheroids, right? Even though basal oxygen consumption rate and the ratio itself doesn't seem to change. So how can that be? Because when you change that ratio, that means when you increase the amount of NAD to NADH, right? The spheroid growth doesn't get repealed or remedied. So there's something beyond that. And what's beyond that, of course, is the endomembranous system. Now, another thing you remember, this protease, YME1L. Remember, it's in the mitochondrial membrane. Which membrane? The inner membrane. And remember what it's doing as a protease. It's outright function. It's balancing this fusion to fission fate for the mitochondrion. It's doing it via limit proteolysis of a dynamin-like GTPase, OPA1, all within the mitochondrial event dynamic. You see? So it was also observed that the growth of spheroids, now here, spheroids is not the spheroid of the mitochondria. Now, the other reason I went through all this for you is because you have to be careful when you read the literature. Spheroid is used as a pathophysiological pseudo-anatomical feature of corrupted mitochondrial fission products. But when we talk about growth of spheroids in three dimensions in culture, we're talking about growing cells that generate within a spheroid, and that spheroid allows those cells to function unattached to the surface of the plate they're growing in. Okay? So that's a different thing. I'm going to explain to you the technique in a moment here. Don't worry. So the growth of spheroids, now this is all in vitro culture events, in 3D, is reduced in the absence of that protease, YME1L. Now, what does that suggest? Doesn't prove or even verify, just suggests that there is some kind of uncoupling with the NAD to NADH ratio in the electron transport chain, and also very likely in the mitosolic tricarboxylic acid pathway. So overall, that condition may indeed enhance mitochondrial spheroid generation as the cells are growing in the spheroid culture, because they're becoming hypoxic when they cluster into those spheroids. So there's where those two terms you can find in the literature, spheroids. This is all in cancer research, a clinical, subclinical cancer research, cell culture work, where mitochondrial spheroids, that pathophysiological pseudo-anatomical alteration of mitochondrial membranous systems, where the mitochondria is opened up and then resealed. And what's resealed are components of the endoplasmic reticulum, the cytoplasm, and even some lysosomal enzymes. And the pH is lowered so that they act like a hybrid between a mitochondria, poorly functioning mitochondria, in terms of electron transport chain, beta oxidation, and things like this, although they still function normally enough to maintain an NAD to NADH ratio, at least for the course of the experiment, they nevertheless also take on an autophagolysosomal activity. Okay? Which is very interesting to me, because that means the mitochondria can actually change their purpose in the cell during corruptions, or maybe not just corruptions, but during the phase transition from a mitochondria to new mitochondria, or to the removal of damaged mitochondria. And those are those spheroid structures. You see? All right. Now, that's what you get when you read the scientific research literature at a very deep level. When you look at the methods and you look for terms and you go and look for what those terms mean in a very, very complex way. Not simply just, here's the definition of this term. You need to understand the context of the event in which that term was generated. So you have to get your mind out of substance ontology. I don't know what else to tell you. Now, a paper published in Cell Metabolism talks about clustering of cancer cells. Okay, let me look at my time here. I'm worried about going over. Oh, no, I'm good. Okay. Now, here's a different paper published in Cell Metabolism. So I reached out to the literature to help understand some of what's going on here. Now, because we're talking about cancer cells in culture, because this is where the clinical and the subclinical component, the biomedical component of this mosaic is starting to be brought in, okay? So this paper told me that the clustering of cancer cells following detachment from the ECM, that's extracellular matrix, has a certain event ontology. And what is that? Hypoxia. That means HIF-1 alpha is going to be functioning. If you remember what's going to happen now, a great deal of proteomic and lipidomic alterations. And transcriptomic, of course, too. So, when you detach from the extracellular matrix, it results in hypoxia. That activates mitophagy. And, of course, one of the initial purposes of the mitophagy is to remove damaged mitochondria. What else occurs, though, is a decrease in the cell overall, because the mitochondria now is going through mitophagy, of NADH production, TCH cycle, right? Thus, what increases is anaerobic glycolysis. Okay? Now, that would be Warburg glycolysis. In the presence of molecular oxygen, you're still getting glycolysis in tumor cells because these are tumor cells are somewhat hypoxic, and they're hypoxic because they're moving away from the extracellular matrix, which means they're not as directly associated to the vasculature in the tumorous zone where it occurs in the human disease. Becomes hypoxic, right? And that's why you get the Warburg glycolysis. It's one of the arguments for it anyway. Now, those responses, if you think about it, because it's going to be hypoxic, it's going to limit mitochondrial reactive oxygen production because you're not getting that one electron at a time reduction of O2 to H2O. It's not going to generate intermediates, which are going to be reactive oxygen species, you see. Now, what's that going to do for the tumor? It's going to prevent the tumor from being intoxicated by the ROS, by the reactive oxygen. So that will allow for cell survival and metastasis, ultimately, in these tumors. So let me check my time here. I've got one more little bit to finish off this discussion. Yeah, I'm still doing fine. Now, remember we were talking about glutamine and that glutamine can be a carbon source that can essentially rescue the anaplerotic functions of the TCA pathway. Notice I don't say cycle anymore. So that intermediates in the TCA can be generated, and particular some of the more later oxidative products can be generated, such as malate and oxaloacetic acid. Okay, now, follow, if you will, this biochemical sequence of events. When glutamine is used as the carbon source, there's a deamination to glutamate. There's a transamination to alpha-ketoglutarate. Now entering the TCA, the next product is succinyl-CoA, then succinate, then fumarate, then malate, then OAA. Now, the malate aspartate shuttle with the component cytosolic malate dehydrogenase and the component mitochondrial malate dehydrogenase will allow for oxaloacetic acid in the cytoplasm to generate phosphoenolpyruvate, thence gluconeogenically to 2-PGA, 3-PGA, 1,3-bis-PGA, dihydroxyacetone phosphate, isomerizing the glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, now forming the DAP and the GAP, forming fructose 1,6-bisphosphate, fructose 6-phosphate, and glucose 6-phosphate. Now, why did I take you from glycolysis to gluconeogenesis? Because this is another occurrence in tumor cells. Start generating wasting carbon that's coming from amino acids, from overall protein breakdown throughout the system, right? Proteolysis, generating circulating glutamine, then onto the glutamate, etc., filling up the TCA site, TCA pathway, almost said cycle again, such that the entire system is burning itself out, but the cancer cell itself is still maintaining activity, but no longer functioning as a normal cell. If it's, say, it's a ductal cell in the pancreas, or if it's an hepatocellular carcinoma or a lung carcinoma, right? You see? So there's a lot of futile cycles generated. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. So real quickly, the spheroid 3D culture, there's a company called Nunclon Sphero 3D Culture System. That's what they use in this paper. And that's designed for 3D tumor spheroid culturing. And also it can be used for organoid culturing, like brain organoids. Okay. And what you gain from this is low attachment of the cell culture plate to the cells. That's why it's known as spheroid culturing. And because of this lack of attachment, you're going to generate cell-cell aggregation, which means those newly organized aggregate cells will start functioning as a component of how the tumor functions in vivo, in the pathophysiological state of the cancer patient, you see. So that's why those 3D culture systems are set up to generate these spheroids, which are aggregates of cells, which are not attached to the cell plate, similar to the detachment from the ECM, okay? The extracellular matrix, right? All right, so hopefully I didn't confuse you with this Friday morning lecture. Hopefully I brought to attention how we're doing these mosaics. So we're at the level of a deep understanding of what's going inside cells at the biochemical level. That's all it is. We're just talking about phenomena here. But we're including what we understand about signaling and the interlocuting communication intra and extracellularly, right? And that's necessary for us to understand what's going on with mitochondria in the disease state, and ultimately how this one enzyme that we're going to eventually land upon and dissect in some detail, this phosphatidic acid phosphatase, can be involved in carcinogenesis, oncogenesis, and also in normal repair of that pathophysiological process. And that will be the end of this particular mosaic when we get that far. Dr. Dan Guerra, Ethnic Biochemistry Podcast, 9 February 2024, saying bye for now.